A god asked Pua to kill. That went against her faith. Her own god asked her to walk away. That went against her calling. What is a faithful midwife to do? Coming up next, right here on The Right Stuff.
Showcasing Christian authors from all over the world. England, Canada, India, Thailand, UK, USA. It's Tuesday night, and this is The Right Stuff. With your host, the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J. Cole.
And welcome to another edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the queen of Tuesday nights, Parker J. Thank you so much for being with me this evening. Very excited to showcase our newest guest co-host and contributor today, Jennifer Jennings. She is the author of the book Midwives of Moses, which is book one of the Faithful Fiction series, which is available on Amazon.com. or wherever books are sold. I really enjoyed this wonderful retelling of the story of Exodus, but through the eyes of someone we don't think about every day, and that's through the midwives. Can't wait to tell you more about that in just a few moments. As I announced last week, we do have our first corporate sponsor. We want to thank ChristianBookClub.com for being our first corporate sponsor. If you want to know more information about them, go to their website, ChristianBookClub.com. Also, we partner with Readio. Readio is an app for all Christian authors to upload their most high fiction into the app. Are you tired of getting moved aside by Amazon algorithms, or when you pull up a search in Amazon, you get weird stuff? Do you want a place just for Christian fiction, whether it's light Christian fiction, nonfiction, edgy, or sweet? You can get it all at the Readio app. If you want to know more information, go to readioapp.com or download the app today on Google Play Store. If you want to weigh in, you know you can. Simply call in at 646-668-8485, then press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag RightStuff, with your questions or comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. The Speculative Fiction Cantina is your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. You'll hear from writers who bend the rules and drive the narrative. We ask authors the hard questions. We do the show in our pajamas. Join S. Evan Townsend on this journey over the rainbow and through the looking glass. The Speculative Fiction Cantina. On Rightstream Radio, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guest. Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very glad you're here with me today. Before I get into our conversation with my guest co-host and contributor, I do want to thank all of our Patreon members for supporting this ministry. Thank you so much. Without this ministry, we couldn't do what we do. For those of you who know, I just started taking donations for The Right Stuff this year. If you are prayerfully considering where to put your next dollars, prayerfully consider supporting the Right Stuff, where we showcase Christian authors all over the world. You can simply go to patreon.com/rightstuff to get more information about the ministry. And as always, you can contact me on my email and I can answer any questions you have. You can become a Quill member for as little as $3 a month. But if you can't support, it's definitely okay, because I covet your prayers. Your prayers do so much more than money can. But if you do want to support us financially, after you prayerfully consider it, you are more than welcome to do so. When I started to read Midwives of Moses, I was really intrigued by the premise of seeing the happenings of Exodus happen through the eyes of the midwives, Pua and Shapur. And this story takes a lot of liberties because it's not the Exodus story per se, but what Jennifer did that I thought was absolutely brilliant was give us a plausible retelling of the events of Exodus happening through the eyes of the midwives. And so without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring her on air today. So Jennifer, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us today on the show. As I always say, I never take it lightly, because you could have been doing anything else today, but you decided to be with me today, and I really do, and I sincerely appreciate that.
I'm very glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
I remember when I saw your books online, I was browsing through Amazon, and I happened to see this gorgeous cover of these beautiful women draped in biblical fashion and Middle Eastern fashion, and I said, oh my gosh, I am salivating over just the covers of the book, which is what drew me to them. And then as I started to read through the stories and what they're about, I said, oh my gosh, we have to get more of these books. So I was really excited and happy when back in May you accepted my invitation to be on the show. And now that I've had a chance to read Midwives of Moses, it was not far-fetched. It was not a stretch of the imagination. They really are as good as the books present themselves. So I'm really excited to delve into Midwives of Moses and then also introduce our listeners to the entire series called Faith Finder Series. It's the entire series. So can't wait to tell more people about your books. But before I do that, I always like to get behind the veil of who you are as an author. So go ahead and tell us about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Jennifer Jennings. I'm a biblical historical fiction novelist. I have 8 biblical fiction titles out there. I'm finishing up the 9th one, which will be released next month. I love diving into the world of the Bible and trying to bring the characters to life. Beyond that, I'm a wife. I'm a mother of 2 kids. I'm also chapter president of a writing critique group and an author liaison for a local arts festival where I live. So I wear a lot of hats.
Nothing wrong wearing a lot of hats. It keeps you busy, or sometimes it keeps you out of trouble. Depends on how you want to look at it, you know. But you mentioned that you are the president of your critique group. So do you have a lot of members of that critique group, or is it just a local thing? Tell us a little bit about that critique group.
It's an international organization called Word Weavers International, and mm-hmm. our entire organization is divided up amongst chapters. So we have local chapters that meet either in person or online. I'm not sure of the exact total of all of us, but my local chapter has about 6 members. We're in a little rural area of the world. But yeah, we meet once a month and we exchange critiques and talk about writing craft and encourage each other. And sometimes I'll offer workshops if I learn new things, as I'm one of the ones who's published several titles. So when I learn things, I try to bring it to the group as chapter president.
Mm-hmm. Now, Word Weavers International, they also, I guess, help authors become better at the craft, and it's good for other authors to network. I find out that sometimes you meet authors who truly feel as if only ones in the world who write their books. Like, there is no one else who writes their books. They are the lone author. For example, I have some authors who write in your particular genre, biblical fiction, and they think, oh, I'm the only one writing this. And then I would think they would be happy to know, no, you're not the only one writing this. And guess what? You can network with other authors that do, because you can share ideas, particularly when it comes to biblical fiction, because it's not as popular as some of the other mainstream genres, but it's just as fascinating. I got to ask you, do you know Mesu Andrews? Do you know her by any chance?
Oh, Mesu Andrews, actually connected online recently. Yeah, we're part of a biblical fiction book club, and she spoke at one of our Word Weavers online conferences recently. I got a chance to speak with her, and yeah, I love her. She's amazing.
Oh, yeah, and when I was talking about her books, I read a couple of her books from my show, and I just adore her fiction, and I adore the way she just weaves this beautiful tale. So I have to let her know that Mesu, we're giving you a shout-out today. She was the keynote at us in SoCal, too. She's a keynote speaker this past SoCal conference this year.
Oh,
so, yeah, I just have to give a shout-out to Mesu. But what is it about biblical fiction and writing in it that you enjoy?
I really, really enjoy bringing the characters of the Bible to life. I think, you know, sometimes we either downplay some of the miracles or we don't get the full story of some of the characters because, you know, if God wrote the entire life of every single person in the Bible, you know, our libraries wouldn't be able to hold all of those books. So, you know, sometimes we get little snapshots of people's life. And so I like to take those characters and add more layers to them and kind of bring them, round them out, if you will, and make them full front characters so that when people go back and read the original story, they can kind of understand a little bit more of the historical or cultural aspects of that person's life, and it kind of gives them more of an understanding of what happened in the Bible.
One of the unique things about biblical fiction, too, is that it's based off of reality. One person I talked to once said, we don't call them Bible stories, we call them Bible narratives, because it's not just a story, like a bedtime story, it's a narrative. And particularly when you have archaeological digs that help support many instances of these stories that happen, so they're called narratives. But I do like it when authors put their own spin on certain things, like you did here in Midwives of Moses. Again, it's book one of the Faith Finder series, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. What made you decide to start this series, Faith Finders?
Well, I had written a few books. I think it was maybe two or three featuring different women of the Bible. I was taking a class with a friend of mine who was a creative editor, and so what their job is to do is to look for plot holes and things like that in your story. And I was working with her on another book, and we were talking about my other books, and she said, well, don't you realize that there's a theme that runs through all of these stories? And I hadn't seen it before, and so she said, you know, you should really turn this into a series. I think it would do fantastic. And so I sat down and I started thinking, you know, what other stories could I add to this that kind of have the same theme of faith and in women in the Bible coming to faith in God? And so I started plotting out all of these different stories, and that's how the Faith Finder series came about.
And you're using women that aren't particularly well known. Like the first book is about the midwives Pua and Shapira. And those, they have a quick say in the Word of God, but we don't know their stories. And you kind of deviate a little bit from the scripture, but then again, this is biblical fiction, so it's kind of okay, you know. You know, it's kind of okay, and I say that facetiously, you know, it's okay. And I like the way you just depicted our understanding of this time frame through their eyes. And for a lot of women, they're going to really resonate with Pua and Shapira because of the fact that they are the midwives of these two very disparate cultures, the Egyptian culture and the Hebrew culture. And actually, as I was reading it, I was kind of surprised that I never thought about the fact that these women would have been midwives, not just to the Hebrew women, but to the other women as well, because women are having kids. You know, they're having kids, and you can't wait to go to the doctor's office, so who's going to take care of it? When you were doing your research for midwifery, what were some things that were surprising to you about it?
Well, at the time that I wrote Midwives of Moses, I had already had two kids, and so I don't really remember anything that was surprising about midwifery in general, but just the fact that these two women would have been respected in the Egyptian culture. You know, I spend a lot of time researching the historical and archaeological and biblical foundations of the original Bible story, so I do try to stay, you know, as close to that as possible, and to realize that because they had this craft, that because they had this medical knowledge, they would have been very respected. And I think that was something that was very surprising to me, because we kind of read in the Bible and we read that the Hebrews were all slaves and they were all lower class and they were all uneducated. And that wasn't true. You know, there were, that was the majority, but there would be those who had medical knowledge. There would be those who were in specialized crafts, you know, and so that it was something that I really wanted to bring out in the midwife story, is that in the Egyptian culture, they would have been very revered and very respected.
That's an interesting take you said, too, because when you start to look at the historical aspect of it, these are people that lived under the burden of the Egyptians for a long while. And obviously, their cultures would eventually connect at different points in time. And one of the things that I really liked was the fact that Pua was able to the house of Pharaoh because of her specialized skill. And another thing that happened was that these women, the way you depict them, they were seen as experts in their field. Now, they weren't experts such as what we understand about things now, but they did pretty good. I mean, after you give birth, help to bring 1,000 children into the world, you pretty much do get good at what you're doing, because like she says in the story, every baby is different. One of the aspects that I wanted to ask you about was, as you were doing your research, you had, and you put a note about this in your first book, you had some interesting things happen with your research as it came to timeline. And one of the things I was thinking about as I read your note was, I was thinking about the Ten Commandments, which is the movie with Charlton Heston. He plays Moses, and it used to be on TV all the time. We watched it every year on TV. And so Moses looks like Charlton Heston. Okay. I can't, there's no other Moses but him, right? So, and I kept thinking about how in that book, Yul Brynner played Ramses, but you actually have a different Pharaoh in the story. So as you were doing your research, how were you trying to narrow down when and what Pharaoh was coming about? How difficult was that for you? What did you eventually decide to do? Tell us a little bit about that research.
Yeah, so that's one of the hard parts sometimes when we research, especially the Old Testament stories, is that all historians disagree about timelines, and we don't have 100% accurate records. And so sometimes it's kind of hard to nail down exact dates. What adds to that frustration is that the Egyptians were very unique in the way that they documented their history. They didn't document kingdoms and such based on birthdays, based on things like that. Their reigns overlapped. Sometimes there would be multiple pharaohs reigning. Sometimes, you know, they just had a different way of recording their history. And so when we try to go back and decipher it, we're never going to be 100% accurate. And when I was doing the research for this book and trying to go down, well, who was this pharaoh that is mentioned in the Bible? Because God doesn't tell us a name. He just uses the word pharaoh, and that just means ruler. Just be, you know, like we say president. It would just be the ruler of their country. And I found that fascinating, that God does not tell us which pharaoh it was. So that means we don't know who it is. And all historians disagree about who it is. A lot of people fall onto Ramses and his kingdom simply because the Bible mentions Ramses the city. But Ramses the city was around long before Ramses the pharaoh. It was a very common name. So that doesn't guarantee that that's who it was. And when I did research about the timeline of the Exodus, it usually falls in about two, there's two dates there, what comes to the forefront. It's 1446 and 1226 or 1246, I don't remember that one exactly. But I just found a lot more historical documentation for the later date, which would put the Egyptian kingdom later and into Thutmose's rules as pharaohs. And then realizing that, you know, Tutankhamun, which is what would have been around the time of Moses, if you use the other date, he didn't have a daughter. And so there wouldn't have been a daughter of Pharaoh. He had two daughters who were stillborn and didn't actually grow up and would have been able to take care of Moses as a baby, versus Thutmose did have a daughter, and his daughter actually becomes a pharaoh for a short period of time. So I really thought that that would have been a much more interesting setting to put these midwives in, is interacting with this family.
Well, it's a good way of looking at it, and particularly you look at the Exodus stories through instead of the eyes of Moses, you look at it through the eyes of a common person, and the midwife represents this particular social structure where she's visiting, quote unquote, the commoners, which is the common Hebrew slave, and she's also visiting the Egyptian hierarchy. And so she really has this unique insight into the culture, and I really thought that was a brilliant element of your story, is that here you have this woman who God has blessed to be part of both of these cultures. And it actually, when I reread Exodus this morning, doing my own devotions this morning, I was thinking about that, like, okay, you know, I'm going to learn more about Shapur and Pur today. So I was really kind of, you know, reading over the story again and listening to how it sounded. And the way you depicted it was, I think, was absolutely brilliant. So kudos to you on
that.
We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. And when we come back, we'll be talking more with Jennifer Jennings and her book, Midwives of Moses, which is book one of the Faith Finder series, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. If you want to weigh in, you can simply call in at 646-668-8485, then press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag RightStuff, with your questions or comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Christian authors and writers, welcome to Readio. Readio app, developed exclusively for showcasing Christian fiction and nonfiction ebooks and audiobooks. Tired of book sales plummeting due to algorithm-influenced unrelated classifications? Books lost amongst non-Christian content? Readio allows you to reach your target audience, who's eager to devour your Most High God-inspired books in a variety of Christian subgenres. You write in a niche market. Readio solely caters to it. Follow at Readio App today on social media or visit readioapp.com to know when we are accepting author catalog uploads. Readio, the best app for the most high-influenced ebooks and audiobooks.
Are you an indie author looking to create audiobooks listeners will love? At The Audio Flow, we handle the entire process, from casting the perfect voice to distribution. Contact us today at 317-927-8770. The Audio Flow, a new way to do audio.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guests. Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very, very glad you are here with me today. We are talking to my guest, co-host, and contributor, Jennifer Jennings. She is the author of the book, Midwives of Moses, which is book one of the Faith Finder series, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. And Jennifer, once again, thank you so much for being with us on the show. Really having fun going into the backstory of the story, but now I really want to delve into the story itself about midwives of Moses. And so we kind of know what it's about. We know it's about midwives of Moses, but we also understand that you took a really creative license with this story because you show the events of Exodus through the eyes of the midwives. So when we begin to read this story, where are we in time as it relates to the book of Exodus and where you start your story at?
Yeah, I think that was one of the challenges of the story, was that I had to cover about 80 years. And sometimes we kind of forget that there probably was several pharaohs that reigned during this time. We you know, the Bible kind of fast forwards through things for us. But between Moses' birth and the time that he returns to Egypt, before the Exodus is 80 years. And so I kind of played around with the two midwives that are mentioned, one being the mentor and one being the apprentice, and then telling the story of midwives of Moses through the apprentice's eyes. And so the story picks up where she is a young apprentice, and it is very near the time of Moses' birth. And then it walks through things that happen during the reign of that Pharaoh. And then as Moses kind of grows, Pua, the main character, also grows in her apprenticeship and her knowledge and her training. And so you kind of follow her story. And then as things progress with Moses's leave and then return, she experiences the Exodus along with the other Hebrews, because she is a Hebrew. So she experiences things, but because of her training, she interacts a lot with Egyptians, and so she gets to see kind of both sides of what's happening, because as we know, you know, during each one of the plagues, at certain points it's with, you know, affects both Egyptians and Hebrews, and at some points it only affects the Egyptians. And with her medical training, she probably would have been called upon to kind of handle some of those things. You know, there's boils, there's frogs, there's lice. There's all of these things that a medical person with a medical background would have had a hand in helping with. And Pua just became that person that was willing to step in. You know, I know a lot of doctors and nurses and people in the medical profession, and they get into it to help people. And so I really wanted to draw that out of Pua too, that she was the first one, you know, out there saying, how can I help, you know, not wanting to give away any spoilers, but there are moments where things are, you know, these plagues are raining down on the people, on the Egyptians, and she goes running towards the danger instead of away from it.
That's the thing about Pua, is that she's extremely proactive in this story. Now, I may be wondering, why are you focusing on Pua? And so let's go back to Shapura, because Shapura is also an important element of this story, because Shapura is a very important person to Pua. Go ahead and tell us how Shapura relates to Pua.
Yeah, Shapura is Pua's mentor, and so she is the one who trains her to become a midwife. You know, back then they didn't have medical schools and things like that available to the Hebrews, and so when you wanted to pass along trade, then you became an apprentice to someone, and you basically learned alongside of them. You did whatever they told you to do, and you learned and you observed and you listened and experienced alongside of them. And so Sephora kind of takes on this role for Pua, that she trains her, she makes sure that, you know, she does what she's supposed to be doing, but she also kind of acts like a type of mother to her as well. I really try to make characters very relatable, and in doing so, they have flaws. And mm-hmm. for anyone who reads the book, Pua is very relatable. She has some flaws that she has to work on, and she has to let God work on in her life. And Sephora is kind of that motherly, you know, person in her life that tells her, you know, you really shouldn't have done this, or you should have done this, you know, should have done it this way. And so she kind of matures and grows, because when she, at the beginning of the story, she's very young. She's, you know, young teens, early 20s. She's very raw, and Sephora kind of comes alongside of her and helps her round out some of those rough edges in order to do her trade and to mature.
One thing I have to say, though, because you were very detailed, not explicitly detailed, I should say, but you were extremely detailed in what they do, and they work around women having children and all that entails. And I'm not a mother, so I wouldn't have any clue, except for what I see on movies and read books. I wouldn't have a clue. But I have to say, as I was reading the story, I was so glad I was born in the 20th century. Okay. Like, I was born in the 20th century, because just their methods of having a baby, like they sat on birthing stones. I had to go look it up. I said, what in the world are birthing stones? And I looked it up, and I just see these massive rocks. I said, what are you doing on rocks? Mm-hmm. So my whole mind imagination is just off the wall with that. And I said, no beds, no sheets, no medicine to dull the pain. It's just you, me, the midwife, and the baby. You know, it was pretty much
yep.
that. And I was so glad I was born in the 20th century of modern medicine. I was so glad, because I can't handle a migraine, much less having a kid. Sometimes if I stub my toe, like, I could imagine being in a situation like that. And But at the same time, their skill set is shown through these activities because they have been bringing children to the world for a long time. So when we get to her mentor, Pua's mentor, one thing I love about her is that she's very quick to be silent. She's very quick to be quiet, and she's very quick to really pace herself before she makes a decision. Why do you think that was an important aspect to bring out in the book?
I really, like I said, enjoy bringing out different character aspects and making it very real to people. And I've had people in my life who, you know, exhibited that to me of they don't, you know, tell you to be quiet and sit down. They show you when to talk and when not to talk. And then as the more that I wrote Sephora, the more that she became that person where she was like this quiet strength. She knew what she knew. She had this knowledge, but she also knew when to be quiet, when to be respectful, when to allow the situation to unfold as it was going to unfold. And so I really, really wanted to bring that part of her character out. I just wanted her to, like, you know, be this really strong, quiet strength in Pua's life because Pua needs it. I mean, Pua is kind of the exact opposite. She tumbles over her words and she speaks when she's not supposed to. And so she needed that balance in her life from her mentor.
I actually like a part in here that I highlighted here where she's praying because they're dealing with a difficult pregnancy. And she says, "Hear her cries to you, Lord." Pua prayed inwardly as her hands grabbed anything in sight to fill the bag. "Give my feet strength to stand beside her. Give my lips strength to remain closed." And I thought that was a very unique way of saying, let me learn how to be quiet. And it's funny because I'm an extrovert and I talk all the time. And shutting up would be a miracle for me. So it was interesting to see this in the story where she says, "Give my lips strength to remain closed." And I thought about that because as midwives, you're dealing with mothers who have never had children before, or they're dealing with mothers who may have had several children, but this one child may be having a more difficult birth. So I thought about how useful just being quiet that would be. And I was like, okay, that actually makes sense. So you really did an excellent job showing us this world of midwifery. Like everywhere you go, there's a kid being born. Everywhere Pua's gone, people know her just by sight. Pua, there's a kid coming. And another thing, too, that you show is the relationship between the midwife and these women, how she doesn't become just the midwife. She becomes almost part of their families. And that was something I had to think about. Like I said, I don't have kids, so I don't have that special relationship with a doctor who may bring my child into the world. You know what I mean? But I saw that relationship and thought it was really excellent how you brought that in there, because now with all of these various relationships she's built, it helped her to become one of the people to go see Pharaoh. And so with that in mind, we can't underestimate just how important these women were, because when Pharaoh called them to himself and told them to kill the kids, he really expected them to do that. You know what I mean? He expected them to do that. So I would love to get your thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of one of the things I wanted to pull out, was more of the human side of the pharaohs, you know, from the Hebrew side looking to the Egyptian side. You know, these were people who weren't questioned. These were, you know, basically gods without hearts. And I really wanted to kind of show a little bit more of their human side. I wanted to get Sephora and Pua into the palace and to show that this was a family that ruled. This wasn't just one man, but he would have, you know, wives, he would have children. And if they became part of those experiences, they might have become part of the family as enough to be respected and called upon for their authority and for their knowledge. And when you trust someone with a medical condition, especially if a pharaoh trusted a Hebrew enough with a medical condition, you trust that person to remain silent. You trust that person, you know, with your life, that whatever they're going to tell you to do or whatever they're going to give you to take is going to be a benefit to you. So they would have had to have earned a lot of trust from the pharaoh and from his family. And I really wanted to show that and developed that side of their relationship a lot more. And so that's why I have them be a part of the family, or not so much as that they were considered family members, but that they were respected enough to be trusted. And that would have been a very big deal in that society.
Another thing I highlighted while I was reading the book was a comment, a thought that she had, rather. She said she wondered if that's what it felt like to be a mother. One moment it was as if time stood still, and the next as if time slipped through one's fingers like sand. And I thought about that because, like I said, I don't have the pleasure of being a mom, but even though she's a midwife and she, in this story, she doesn't have children of her own, she's surrounded by kids that she brought forth into the world. So I couldn't help but wonder, did she have that maternal instinct, even though she didn't have her own children? In a sense, she had thousands of kids, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I mean, after you've seen that many births, how could you not be connected to these children? I mean, one minute there's no life and the next there's life in your hands. And she got to experience that, you know, multiple times over. It awakens that part of you to want to be involved in others' lives and their well-being.
I like, too, how she says you never get used to it. Even though you bring children into the world, mm-hmm. you never get used to it because each child is different. So I did like how you put that unique aspect onto their characters here in the story. Now, like I said, you did take
and that actually.
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to touch on that real quick. That actually came from a real life moment for me when mm-hmm. I was giving birth to my second child. The nurse that was helping me when my daughter was born, she cried. And I asked her, I said, well, you know, you're an OBGYN nurse. Like, you do this day in and day out multiple times a day. And she goes, no, you never get over it. And so I really wanted to put that in there of it doesn't matter how many times you see this, it's still a miracle. You still get to see life happen. And so that's where that came from.
Skill set. So even though you have the skill set doesn't make the job. It's the connection with the skill set. And that's one thing that really showed out through here, through the story. Now, you did take some liberties with the story, like I said, and I enjoyed that. And I wanted to let our listeners know this is not a retelling of Exodus. It's Exodus being retold, basically. And that's important because I could tell some people going, this isn't what happened. I said, we know. Calm down. It's biblical fiction. We just took parts of it and created this wonderful story that I definitely enjoyed. In particular, I wanted to touch on the story of Moses because we know the story of Moses very well, but seeing it through the midwife's eyes was just incredible to see because she would have seen this young boy with his mother mm-hmm. and his birth to see him be put into the Nile and to see him grow. And she has such high hopes for him as the next Pharaoh. And then he walks away from it. And I think at that mm-hmm. moment, you really depicted, even though she wasn't his mother, you depicted that connection that she had with him because she helped bring him into the world and she had these high hopes for him to be the next Pharaoh. Why was that important to show that just because you may have dreams for your children, God has other things in store for them?
Yeah, I think that was a really important part of Moses's story that I wanted to bring out. Because he did have the opportunity to be Pharaoh. In order for him to be accepted into the family, he would have basically been legitimately adopted by the Pharaoh and so would have had an opportunity to reign in place of any other children. So I really wanted to show that, you know, that if he was a Hebrew and he was who they believed God had sent and rescued because he had been rescued from the Nile, that how much hope that he would have brought to his people at that moment when he was 40, when he was, you know, able to reign, and then for him to walk away from it and basically leave all of it behind might have been devastating to them, but for his mother and the midwives to realize, you know, you're not going to be able to force people to do what you want them to do. You know, Moses made a mistake and he had to pay for that. And he was gone for 40 years. Now God eventually did end up using him and bringing hope to the Hebrew people and freeing them, but he was gone for 40 years. And so after 40 years, you kind of start losing hope. And so when he comes back, it's a huge moment for Pua because she remembers that, you know, it was their God that saved him And she knew that God was going to do, and so did Moses' mother, his birth mother, knew that God was going to use him.
We are talking today to Jennifer Jennings. She is the author of the book, Midwives of Moses, one of the Faith Finder series. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. If you want to weigh in, you know you can. All you got to do is call in at 646-668-8485. Then press 1 to be live on air. Or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stuff. With your questions or comments, we're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The SpecFaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
Sofa Talk Podcast will consider Spurgeon's morning and evening devotionals, which deal with all of the things that we are fearful and anxious of, like job, family, and our country. Plus, we will take your prayer requests. Join us on upcoming episodes Monday through Friday for Sofa Talk at anchor.fm/russell-sherard. That's anchor.fm/russell-sherard.
We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guest. Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very, very glad you're here with me today. We're talking to my guest, co-host, and contributor today, Jennifer Jennings. She is the author of the book, Midwives of Moses, Book 1 of the Faith Finder series, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. If you want to get in contact with Jennifer, simply go to her website, jenniferjennings.com. That's Jennifer with one N. So it's jenniferjennings.com. And follow her on Twitter. You can follow her on Twitter at author Jennifer. You know, Jennifer, once again, thank you for being with me on the show. What I want to do now is get to the familiar part of the story of Exodus, but it's also unfamiliar because you begin to experience the plagues of Egypt through the eyes of someone who's not in the royal court like Moses would have been, but she's among the women, among the children. And very rarely do you see her meet a lot of men in the story, unless they're boys or sons that she meets. That was one aspect that I love. Like, this book is full of women. There are hardly not many male characters in this story at all because she's a midwife. And who would she really be talking to? The women. And there's a comment in here that she makes. She says, if husbands and children brought such ache, she wanted no part of them for herself. That's what she says. In the story. Mm-hmm. And even though she says that, at the same time, she's surrounded by women and husbands and children. So she still gets a taste of that domestic lifestyle that sometimes she can see can cause pain to others. So I thought that was a unique take on it. But now we want to get to the part of the story. We're not going to spoil any. Most of us are familiar with the Exodus narrative, but we want to get to the part of the story where she starts to experience these things. And before I, you know, touch on just a couple of the plagues and her experience with them, I want to know, when you were researching the story behind the plagues, what did you discover about each of these plagues? Because these plagues were extremely deliberate and they were aimed at a certain thing. So tell us about why these plagues were significant to the narrative in biblical times and why they're significant to the narrative in your fictional story.
Yes, this is one of my favorite things that I love to do when I write biblical fiction, is to bring out some of the things that the Bible doesn't have time to tell us, that those original readers would have known that we don't. And so one of my favorite things in researching the plagues was, not only do each one of them have a natural aspect to them, as in the natural world, the physical world that we can put our hands on that, you know, affect the natural world, but they also had a spiritual aspect to them, because the Egyptians had lots of different gods, but they didn't just have a bunch of random gods. They had very deliberate specific gods, and specific gods that were assigned to different parts of nature and for different reasons. And so they had this entire culture built around these specific gods and in their attributes and what they were assigned to. And so when God starts bringing these plagues on Egypt, he is literally knocking out one by one some of their biggest and most important gods in their Egyptian life in order to prove himself to be the one and only God. And so each time, and as the plagues build, we start to see that at first there's kind of these natural explanations of, oh, it could be this or it could be this. But when you combine all of these things, the only thing that you can point to is, okay, there's a God who's much bigger than the gods that we're used to, and now we're dealing with his wrath. And so I really, really wanted to pull all of that out in the story.
Another aspect too, because I've read about this as well, that the byplay or the back and forth between Pharaoh and Moses and Aaron was actually a representation of a story that had been passed down through the Egyptians about the contentions of Seti. And Seti was one of the gods of Egyptian mythology. And it was supposed to be this big contest between gods. And so at first they're thinking, the Egyptians are thinking, oh, because Pharaoh was considered a god on earth, that it was him fighting another god. But they quickly began to realize that this was not like any other god they had ever thought about before, you know. And what is the significance of some of the plagues happening to both Israel, and then the significance of it happening when it only affected just Egypt until the final plague? What was significant about that?
I think that's just a testament to God's power. Like I said, each of the beginning plagues, the plagues build. And so the first couple of ones are ones that are not so bad. They affect everyone. They're very easily dismissed, very easily explained. And then as the intensity starts to build, we start seeing this division between Egypt and the Hebrews. And for 400 years, they had been intertwined and mixed together and put in a melting pot, if you will. You know, the Hebrews tried their best to hold on to their culture and their language and their identity. But when you live amongst a people for 400 years, you know, there's going to be influences there. And so God was literally drawing them out and pulling them apart from the Egyptians as each plague happened. And this happened over several months. You know, sometimes we read the plagues quickly and we think that maybe it just happened in a week, but this would have taken time. And so God was literally drawing the hearts of the Hebrews away from the Egyptians and separating them out for himself. And so when we get to the last couple of plagues and we see that they only affected the Egyptians, and we see that it's God's judgment on the Egyptians for what they have done to the Hebrews and how he protected the Hebrews, we see his grace in the middle of judgment. And we're so quick to say, oh, the God of the Old Testament is the God of judgment. But he's also the God of mercy in that. Yes, he was judging Egypt, but he was also being merciful to the Hebrew people. And he gave the Egyptians several ways to repent and several opportunities to, you know, ask for forgiveness and to repent from their ways, and they didn't. And so the God of judgment is also the God of mercy, and I really wanted to explain that aspect of that too, and the separation of he was pulling the Hebrews out of Egypt.
And it's interesting because Pua can see it as she lives through these plagues. When the first plague happens, when he turns the water to blood, she is washing out some baby garments in the river. And all of a sudden she looks, she goes, wow, it's a lot of red in the water. And she said, what, that much blood on here was there? And her apprentice is there like, no, they said, wow, it's a lot of blood. You know, it's kind of happening to her. She's like, oh my goodness, what's going on here? And she doesn't find out too much later. Oh, guess what? Moses was talking to Pharaoh and told him this was going to happen. And I really like seeing it from the common point of view, because even though we only hear about Moses and Pharaoh in the Bible, millions of people were affected by these plagues. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Millions of people were affected by it. The Nile is a highly important riverway in Egypt, and especially in ancient times. Very important. And they worshiped the Nile as a god. And to see your god bleed must have did something to them. They thought that they bled. Even the Hebrews, like you said, they had got intermixed with it. Maybe some of the Hebrews even believed in the Egyptian gods, because that's what they had known, because the Egyptians were the taskmasters, you know. And to see that happen, it must have been extremely jarring for them. And Pua's going back and forth between the Hebrews and the Egyptians. She's still trying to do her work, but even she is forced to see this widening divide between the Hebrews and the Egyptians. And even though she already to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it just became more real for her, I think, the more she started to experience these plagues, particularly when it came to the plague of frogs. Now, with the plague of frogs, now, I've never seen a frog. No, I take that back. I have seen a frog. It was fried. It was delicious. That was the only frog I've ever seen. I actually like frog legs. And they don't taste like chicken, but they do taste good. But that's the closest I've gotten to seeing a frog. And I don't think I've ever, like, held one in my hand. But when you see the frogs, the significance of the frogs was about fertility, I think. Like, the frogs represented fertility. And you have all these frogs all over the place. And after a while, the frogs are just a nuisance. And then, not just having the frogs be a nuisance, but when they die, they're just stinking up the entire country. You know, and imagine what's that doing for the Egyptians, and for the Hebrews, who would have fallen into this trap of maybe thinking, well, maybe the frog is a god. You know what I mean? Maybe the frog's a god. And then all of a sudden they're like, get these frogs out of my house. And suddenly they're regulated what they are, created beings, you know. So I love seeing these events happen through Pua. Now, you took some creative license with Pua as well, because she talks a lot with Moses and with Aaron. And I like how you show Moses differently than what I would have depicted him as, because Moses has been out in the wilderness for 40 years, and so he's forgotten some of his Egyptian, and the dialect of the Midianites are different than the dialect of the Hebrews. So he's not stuttering, per se. Like, I have the impression he stuttered, but you get the impression that he didn't quite understand the lingo. So tell us a little bit about that and how Pua becomes his bridge between him, the people, and Pharaoh.
Yeah, I think it's interesting sometimes when we come to the Bible and we have these things that we think the Bible says. And the more and more that I studied about Moses and his life, nowhere in the Bible does it say that he stuttered. All it says is that he was slow of tongue. And that could have been interpreted dozens of different ways. And so I started researching and realizing that, you know, he's been gone from Egypt and from the Hebrews for 40 years, and he's living on the backside of a mountain in what we would have said, you know, the boondocks. You know, he's just living out there in the middle of nowhere with these other group of people, that he would have picked up their language, and he would have dismissed the Hebrews and all of the knowledge and all of the training that he received there in Egypt. But when he comes back, he's coming back as who he is. You know, he's just this shepherd. He's this, you know, guy who's just used to talking to sheep and not talking to kings and gods. And he's expected to just go before Pharaoh and say, here, go have a conversation. And so Pua comes alongside of him and Aaron and starts helping him, you know, rediscover who he was and who he is, and that he has to kind of deal with that situation of that he was, you know, this Egyptian, this Hebrew that was pulled out of the Nile, who was training to become an Egyptian and then has spent 40 years being a shepherd. He's all of these different people, but he's still, and God's still going to use him. And, you know, not to spoil it, but, you know, my Moses and midwife Moses doesn't stutter. He has a language barrier that he has to overcome. And sometimes I think we forget that because, you know, our translation of the Bible is written in English, but they would have been speaking multiple languages. They would have spoken Egyptian. They would have spoken Hebrew. They would have, you know, had some different dialects. And I wanted to touch more on that because it felt more real to me than if he stuttered. Because if he stuttered, the Egyptian family wouldn't have accepted him. They would have, you know, counted that as a black mark on their family if he had this stuttering issue. And he was basically ready to be the next pharaoh. He was, you know, very intellectual. He was a warrior. He was trained by the best of the best of the best and had private tutors. So he would have been very eloquent in Egyptian and Hebrew and very fluent in both. So he just didn't feel like that person would have developed a stutter out in the wilderness. And so I said, well, what other explanations can we have that would make it feel more real, more realistic? And that's when I came up with the language barrier issue, that to a Hebrew ear or Egyptian ear, the way he spoke would have sounded off because he was speaking the Midianite language, which was slower and different than they speak. You know, we might assume that that meant that he was slower intelligently, but he was having to overcome this language barrier. But through his brother and through Pua and through other people, he's able to overcome that and be able to finally speak for himself. And that's a powerful moment in the book when Moses finally gets up the courage enough to speak for himself and puts aside his, I can't speak, and tells his brother to stop speaking, and he speaks for himself. And he speaks in the power of God and sings praises to God and says, you know, I am here representing my God. And that was such a powerful moment to write about.
Another aspect that I definitely enjoyed was the fact that Pua was old by this time, and God used her in your story and lets us know that you're never too old to be used by the Lord. And there are some wonderful events that take place, I won't tell you what they are, where Pua is riding the chariot, so you will, even though she's just a midwife, you know. And there are times where she has to save lives and she has to do all these things just through her office as a midwife. And finally, we're close to the top of the hour, but I do want to touch on this really quickly. Finally, there's this dark moment that Pua realizes, and comes the 10th plague of Egypt, and she is devastated by what's happening here. I mean, absolutely devastated. She has come to help bring life into the world. So how, in a sense, she has her own doubts about God. Like, how can a God do this? What I love, we're not going to go into it because I do want our listeners to pick up the book, but what I love is that you don't give a clear, concise answer. Because some things, God does not always have to explain himself to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always looking for an explanation, just like with Job. You know, he wanted his day in court with God to talk about whatever. You know, sometimes we get mad. Well, why did you have me have this? You know, and toward the end of the book, it's not a clear, concise answer. What becomes concise and clear is Pua's reaction to her confusion of what God is doing. And that reaction is to trust that he knows better than her. That was, to me, one of the more pivotal parts of the book, because you are devastated by this thing. But then, like you said earlier in the show, they had numerous opportunities to change their mind. Pharaoh could have changed his mind, and God still would have got the glory regardless. You really think about it, if Pharaoh had said, all right, I can go, he would have got the glory. But because of the various undercurrents happening in Egypt, he couldn't have said that. He couldn't have said that. And that's why he kept hardening his heart, because he thought he was a god. He was trained to think, I am a god on earth. I'm not going to let this other god, this Hebrew god, tell me, this god, what to do, you know. And so there's a lot going on that we don't get a chance to delve into a lot in the scriptures. But that's why God lets us, you know, research and dig down into what's between the verses to get a more in-depth idea about that. And so, you know, what have readers said about midwives of Moses? What has been their response?
Oh, I've gotten a great response. People love the characters. They love the story. You know, they love that I really do take my time learning about the historical and the cultural context, and I really try to bring those to the forefront and make it real. I always like to say that I like to put my reader – in the biblical character sandals, like I try to put them right there on the ground, feeling what a real person would have felt, dealing with what a real person would have dealt with. And I can still use those themes, like you said, of, you know, Pua asking God why, but she doesn't get an answer. And that's very applicable to all of our lives, that sometimes we ask God why and he doesn't necessarily answer, but our response is to trust him anyway, because we've seen what he's done for us in the past and we recognize who he is. And so we should just trust him anyway. But yeah, this is one of people's favorite books, and I really appreciate that, because it was one of my favorite to write, and I got to spend more in the Egyptian this book versus a lot of books. So that was really fun to write, and I'm glad, you know, people really appreciate that.
Another thing, too, is that the things that we learned from Pua, we can still apply today. And that was also highly relatable in the story. And so what we're going to do, I want to thank you so much, Jennifer, for being with me on the show today. Really enjoyed having you and getting behind the scenes of the story. And what I want to do before we go, I always invite our guest co-hosts to encourage our aspiring authors out there whom God has given the gift of write to pick up a pen and do so. So go ahead and encourage them out there today.
Yeah, I want to thank you again for the opportunity. But for anybody out there listening who really feels the tug on their heart to write, I always say to invest in learning your craft. If it is something that is a passion in you, then dedicate the time and your resources to learning it. And that will bless you 100 times over. There's so much good information out there. There's so many good resources. And sometimes those pushing past those plateau moments in our lives where we don't know what to write next or we don't know which step to do next, we just need to take the time to pray first and foremost, figure out what God wants us to do, and then look at the resources around us. You know, joining a critique group was a big step for me in moving from a hobby to a career in writing, and getting to network with other writers and getting to pick other writers' brains and taking classes and things like that was what really poured into me and invested into my writing to make it what it is today. And so those aspiring writers out there, I say, you know, wherever you are, you know, find those resources out there to make yourself better. You know, we're this writing community is one in which we support each other. We're never out to, you know, compete with each other. We're here to support each other. And so reach out, network, ask questions, you know, find those writers out there who are willing to sit down and you have them, you know, pick their brain about things because they're out there. When I first started writing, I actually got in contact with two New York USA Today bestsellers list, and they were willing to sit down and talk with me for an hour and just let me pick their brain. So, you know, they're out there, and don't feel like you have to do this alone. You know, God's there and your writing community is there. Seek them out, seek out the knowledge, get better at your craft every day, and God's going to bless you for it.
Jen, thank you so much for being with us on the show today. I really enjoyed having you and cannot wait to have you back and have you back real soon.
Oh, thank you so much. It was amazing getting to chat with you. I absolutely love talking about, you know, biblical fiction and writing, and it was just an absolute blessing for me to talk to you tonight.
And we were talking today to Jennifer Jennings. She is the author of the book Midwives of Moses, which is book one of the Faith Finder series, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. One thing that I enjoyed that Jenna said, she said, you know, she loves writing about biblical fiction, about Bible, and bringing these characters that I read about in the scriptures to life. Is this something that God has given to you too? Do you also have that need to take these stories and bring them to life in the way that only you can do it, then why are you sitting down on your ability? Go ahead, pick up the pen, and write stuff. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of The Write Stuff. I'm the Queen of Tuesday Nights, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.